inspiring you to reach your goals and live your dream. This is the Keaton Nelson Show.
All right, guys, I have an awesome guest for you today. You got Brian Bogert, not in the building, but he is, where are you at, Phoenix?
I'm in Phoenix, bro.
Phoenix, Arizona. This guy, he helps people from the inside out, a coach, a speaker. I mean, I think you got other companies and stuff going on, but Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe who you are and who can you help and how do you help them?
Perfect. So who I am, I always have to start with, I'm a husband and father first. Always. That is one of the only things that is binary in my world. Meaning if my wife and my kids aren't good, I'll walk away from everything else I'm working on. But who I am, I'm intellectually curious. I'm a human being that appreciates other human beings. I deeply love human connection. I believe that the glue that binds human connection is vulnerability and authenticity. And, you know, I've got some unique stories. We may get to them or not. I'll quickly hit the top level one. And if we want to dive into it deeper, we can. But when I was a little kid, I was run over by a truck and my left arm was completely severed from my body. Was reattached. I've had 24 surgeries. There was years of struggle and adversity. And that's where we developed some of our core concepts, which is that I learned early in life not to get stuck by the things that have happened to me, but instead get moved by what I can do with them. And all this time that I've been working with people, I've learned that move people. And I've also learned this concept of embracing pain to avoid suffering. I think that's also where we gain freedom. So you looked like you were about to say something, brother. So
We're not going to glaze over that. I was going to stop you in a second anyway. But yeah, dude, tell me the story. I got to hear the story. How this happened, man.
All right. So my mom, my brother, and I went to our local Walmart to get a 1-inch paintbrush. I was 7 years old.
Seven.
Yeah. Yep. 7 years old, August 10th, 1992. It was 115 degree day, 6:10 PM. We're walking back to our car. And anybody who's known me for more than 2 minutes knows I've got a lot of energy. And so I was in the car first. And I was anxious to get home and put that paintbrush to use. This was back in the days, brother, before there was a key fob though. So I had to wait for my mom to literally get the physical key out of her purse, put it in the door, turn the key so we could go on with our day. And as I was waiting for her to catch up, she was 3-4 feet behind me. There was a truck that pulled up in front of the store and the driver in the middle passenger parked and got out. Passenger all the way to the right felt the truck moving backwards. So he did what any one of us would do, Keaton. He scooted over his foot on the brake. And what I didn't realize until recently is if I was in a car moving backwards, I'm probably not going to move over and just calmly put my foot down on the brake and just slowly depress it. I'm probably in panic mode. I'm raising my knee up as high as I can and I'm slamming it down on that gas or on the brake pedal. Right. Yeah. I think that's what this guy did, but he missed and he hit the gas pedal. So all that force went into the gas pedal, threw him up on the steering wheel, up on the dashboard. Before you know it, he's catapulting 40 miles an hour across the parking lot right at us with no time to react. So we're there. I'm standing there by the car. We think my hand was on the handle, goes up and over the median, goes up over the tree in the median, hits our car, knocks me over, runs over me diagonally, tearing my spleen, leaving a tire track scar on my stomach, and then continuing on to sever my left arm. So my mom and my brother watch the whole thing happen. They look up and they see me laying on the ground. They see my arm laying 10 feet away. And fortunately for me, my guardian angel also saw the whole thing happen. There was a nurse that walked out of the store right when this took place. And I always have to bring her into this story because I'm forever indebted to this woman for choosing to go into action versus go on with her day when she saw the life and limb scenario in front of her. She came over and she stopped the bleeding on the main wound and saved my life. And then she instructed some innocent bystanders to run inside, grab a cooler, fill it with ice, and put my detached limb on ice within minutes to give me a fighting chance of having a reattached limb. So had she not done one or both of those things, Keaton, I either wouldn't be here with you today, or I'd be here with you today with a detached or with a cleaned up stump and a detached limb. So I know that you were like, hey, we're not going to just gloss over that. I was trying to be really, really clear to answer your question before going into that story. But I'm happy that we paused to do so because here's the thing I've realized. I know your audience was not expecting me to go there today.
Yeah, right.
They were not expecting to hear that story. In fact, I'm not even sure you were, even though you've been following my content.
That's right. I forgot that you were the person with this story, to be completely honest with you. I'm like, because I've heard it, I think maybe 3 or 4 times and I have pieced together that's
cool. Yeah, which is totally fine. By the way, I love that because I would rather not be known by my arm, but for who I am, right?
Right.
And so that's truly one of the big things that's been taking place because here's the thing. I have a unique story.
Yeah.
I've also realized in all my time of doing this is that we all, Keaton, have unique stories. Mm. What's important is that we pause and become aware of the lessons we can extract from our stories and then become intentional with how do we apply those in our lives. And we all have the ability to do that. We also all have the ability to tap into the collective wisdom of other people's stories to shorten our own curve to learning.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to the story because I'm just too interested. arms, you see your arm laying over there?
So I was unconscious.
You're
I was
unconscious. Okay.
So I don't have a memory. I truly don't have memory of the event that day.
What was the aftermath like?
Well, the aftermath started right away because the first ambulance that was called got into a car accident. So that was a whole different thing. And then there was a whole lot of other stuff that took place from it. But the aftermath, brother, was I spent, I don't know, 3 weeks in the hospital right after. They started doing surgery. My first memories after the event were waking up in the hospital bed, feeling like I was in a dream. It didn't seem real to me. And I literally was so heavily medicated and so much in and out of consciousness because of the amount of pain, physical pain that I was in.
Yeah.
That, you know, our bodies shut off in those moments because the demands exceed our ability to cope. But I do remember a few days after the first time I woke up, having a little bit of clarity, understanding and feeling like this is real, this is in front of me. And I immediately shifted into feeling sorry for myself.
Yeah.
Why me? Right? Why me? What is this going to look like for my life? And at 7 years old, I still had the wherewithal to like recognize like, oh, this is going to materially change my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I started feeling really bad for myself, feeling really down for myself. And then I was given a gift really early. You know, I told you that one of my core lessons, I learned not to get stuck by what's happened to me, but instead get moved by what I can do with it. And that happened because of the gift I was given when I was in the ICU. You see, my family all was in that same place. And then we started getting support from the other families in the ICU around us. Other families coming up to us saying, we're so sorry for what happened to you guys. We're so sorry. This is so traumatic. We can't even believe it. Anything we can do to help. What can we do to help? How do we support you guys?
Yeah.
And I get chills every time I tell that portion of the story, because the next thing we would find out after they came up to us and introduced us is that their kids laying in the hospital bed next to me, not knowing if they're going to live for another 30 days because of the terminal illness that they have.
Mm.
Perspective hit me pretty hard at that moment.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't know in those few weeks. In fact, I didn't know for months whether or not my arm would successfully be reattached or that I would have functional use of it like I do today.
Mm.
But what I did know is that I had my life. And the immediate threat to my life was no longer something we needed to concern over. And so perspective points us to what's important, just like pain points us to what's important. And so, you know, that was kind of what the initial aftermath came from. And that also started to come into this place of conditioning some of the shame that I talk about so publicly. And one of the areas that we've really learned to help people through their emotional triggers, behavioral patterns, and environmental conditioning is early on. I didn't even realize that I had shame for years. But when I got back to the root of part of my shame, one of them was in the fact that I would show up in a sling for 6 months with a teddy bear in between my arm because my arm had to be out 90 degrees from my body to heal the bone correctly. And inevitably people would look at me and they'd be like, Brian, what happened to you? Right. And I would answer it almost like I slipped it into the beginning of the conversation. Well, I was running by a truck. My arm was ripped off.
Right.
Right. Like, cause to me it's just so matter of fact, it's my truth. It's my story. And I don't really pay attention to the extremity of my story until I see other people's reactions, but I got really used to seeing their jaws hit the ground. And then they'd immediately, after I answered the question, cause they were expecting me to say, I crashed my bike, fell off a jungle gym, you know, like did something stupid, whatever. They'd look over to my parents for validation.
If he's, they didn't even guys, is he story. Lying? Yeah.
They didn't even believe my story. My own truth wasn't accepted and believed by the large part of the world, which I realized later was a big part of conditioning my shame because I wasn't seen and understood and I wasn't connected at a level that made me feel understood. Mm. Right. And so I created this wall and I started to create this intellectual narrative because the other dynamic that happened was I was immediately being put into a box based on how other people viewed what they'd be capable of in my situation. Not what Brian is capable of in this situation, but oh my gosh, with all this trauma, with all these limitations, with this inability to have his arm functioning at 100%, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on. All of a sudden, they just assumed what I was not able to do.
Yeah.
So I created this intellectual narrative. I'm good. I'm strong. I'm capable. I can do anything myself. And I did that very, very well for a long time till it bit me. But that was the aftermath over the initial period was I had to like really relearn how to live. I had to relearn how to button my pants and tie my shoes and do all these things. And oh, by the way, when I rebroke my arm when I was 20, almost lost it again after it hanging by my side for 10 months, I had to re-experience the exact same element of learning that I did as a kid. But I now had a different lens and perspective on it, which gave me a different depth of understanding into what I could learn and extract from those experiences.
Mm. So you said that, I mean, it messed with you when people wouldn't believe you. You're a kid and they're looking for your parents for validation, which I mean, does make sense from the people who are just, their jaw just hit the floor and they're like this totally. Kid.
And no blame again. I'm not.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And but like what I'm getting at here is you also just said that like you created your own narrative that you're willing, you're able, you can do this. You're going to take the action, but you just said it bit you. Like that in my mind is like, oh, that's good mindset. You should have that mindset, but you said it bit you. What do you mean?
Well, what I love is that you picked up on the fact that I didn't even use the word mindset or mental toughness, but that's exactly what it was. And it did serve me very well. And I had this old historical belief that if I had strong mental toughness, a strong mindset, I could do anything. And again, it served me well.
Yeah.
But it's only part of the equation. So how it bit me was when I rebroke my arm when I was 20. And I woke up and I had lots of friends, lots of family, but nobody was there to help me.
Mm.
Now, the initial response to that might be, well, they're just bad people. I could create resentment. I could create frustration. But the reality of it was, is what I got very, very clear on is it wasn't that they didn't love me. It wasn't that they didn't want to help me. It's that they believed in the strong mental narrative that I'd created for the world, which was Brian was good. Brian's strong. He's capable. He can do anything himself. And if he needs our help, he'll ask for it.
Yeah.
But I built that wall of armor up so tough that I didn't have the courage to be vulnerable enough to ask for help in that time.
Mm.
And so that started to make me realize that mental toughness alone is not the ultimate game. It's a very critical part of the equation. I'm very strong in helping people understand their mindset, their mentality, the way that they approach things. But I shifted that next period of life towards human connection. Because if I wasn't connected enough to people for them to be there when I needed them, and I couldn't feel safe enough to be connected to them to ask for help, then human connection was what I was missing because that armor was what had prevented me from getting it. So I started focusing on vulnerability and authenticity, which are the glue that binds human connection. And I mastered that from a strategic and tactical perspective, again, until I realized that there was more depth behind that as well.
Hmm. So let's say, I mean, I'm interested in like, how could you help me? You know, I'm maybe a little selfish here, but I think it could help the viewers as well. But like, I think I care a lot about what people think. I'm afraid to, you know, I'm trying to like go at it with, let's say like posting on social media and taking like reels of myself talking on the phone or whatever, and just posting it anyway. But at the end of the day, I mean, do you get over a fear from like facing it like that and eventually seeing that it's not that big of a deal or something? Cause I don't know that I'm 100% over it yet, you know?
I don't think it's just as simple as turning into it.
Yeah.
It can work in some situations, but there's a lot more depth behind it. The piece that I didn't quite understand, and I'm going to come full circle to answer your question, but sure. I think it's really important for us to understand this piece before I answer your question.
Cool.
When I told you that human connection, I realized there was more depth. It's because I started to feel emotion again in my early 30s. When I shut off physical pain because it exceeded my ability to cope when I was 7, I also unintentionally shut off emotional pain and I didn't realize it for 25 years.
Did it come all at once? Just out of curiosity.
It started to come in layers and it came in big waves. But what I started to realize is that human connection without emotion isn't really human connection. So though vulnerability and authenticity are what binds it, emotion is what really creates the connection. And so that's also when I started to realize that, okay, if mental toughness and mindset isn't all of it, emotional isn't either. The reality of it is the world taught us not to think and not to feel. Truly.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm encouraging people to take it a level deeper because it's not about just learning how to think and learning how to feel. It's about understanding whether we're hardwired to intellectualize or feel first, because we're all different there, but we all experience both. And then learning to balance and regulate between both narratives so that we're learning at that moment to not only think and feel, but to think about our thinking, think about our feeling, feel our thinking and feel our feeling. It's in that quadrant that we start to escape these patterns. So when you say, I care about what people think, right? And I've been able to move forward on this in the case, like, do I just have to continue to like just trudge and put myself into a position where I'm vulnerable and not worry about what people think? Yeah, that is part of it. But the reality of it is typically when we are operating from a position like that, a low energy or a low frequency, that's really coming from a place of scarcity, insecurity, shame, worth, or some factor, it's not just a matter of like, okay, I'm going to shut that off and go to battle anyway.
Right.
Because until we actually unroot that emotion to see it very clearly for where it came from, how it's actually created patterns in our life, how it's continuing to confine us, we can't effectively move through it. So what you're doing is what I used to do and what so many people do. Well, if I just put my mindset to it, I can push through this insecurity and I'm just going to continue to show up. Yet every single time, and I'm going to guess this is true for you, you still are spinning inside. a little still feel insecure.
Or I got good at suppressing it, you know, being like,
right. Ooh. So, you know, that's the other factor of it, right?
Yeah. Is
that emotion that's keeping you in that place is still existing.
Right.
And so one of the biggest things we do in our Inside Out method is we focus really a lot on the third step, which is to unroot. So I'll just hit the unroot for a minute. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever done weeding? Have you ever pulled a weed in your life?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you pulled a weed out of concrete? Like it's grown up between the cracks?
Yeah.
What happens in that situation when you try to pull the weed?
You like rip off the top, right?
The root remains, right?
Right. Yeah.
So then what happens? The weed grows back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. What about the lawn? Have you ever pulled weeds in a lawn?
Yep.
I know that for myself, unless I was really anal about my lawn at some point, I used to be like, oh, well, there's a weed in the lawn. I'll just mow over it. It's green. It'll blend in the grass, right?
Sure.
But same thing with the concrete. If you mow over it, the root remains,
mm-hmm.
right? And the weed continues to grow and the root continues to get stronger and grow deeper in the ground and continue to get nourished. Our emotions are no different. Unless we actually can unroot the cause, the source or source, the root or roots of those core emotions that cause us to feel unworthy, cause us to feel guilt, cause us to feel insecure, cause us to feel anxious and stressed around what other people might feel, cause us to feel judged, until we effectively get down there and literally pull that entire root out, it will continue to develop and regrow. Mm-hmm. Shame is something that impacted me deep in my life, right? And here's the thing about shame. It is the ultimate wolf in sheep's clothing because it presents itself as all these other emotions. And we start to tell ourselves, well, if I just continue to move through it, then I'm going to be okay. But then again, we continue to perpetually repeat that cycle because shame is an adversary in constant pursuit. It will be after me for the rest of my life unless I'm vigilant in my efforts to be aware and intentional with it in every moment so that it no longer confines me in those moments. So for you, I don't know what the root is, right. But I would tell you that there's an element that probably is connected to something before the age of 10. It probably is something to do with you not feeling seen and understood. It probably has something to do with something about giving or receiving love or connection through validation. And it's probably something to do with some element of your worth and judgment and shame that's connected to how you were made to feel at that time that started to build this armor and belief up that nobody's going to see and understand you. Nobody's going to connect with you. Nobody's going to really be able to see who you are so that you can feel worthy based on just exactly who you are. You actually hide who you are.
Yeah. Without being able to without getting picked apart or something. You know what I mean?
Bingo.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things we do with everybody that we work with, whether they're in a one-to-one coaching, group coaching, and anything that we do, it's to really be able to bring with absolute awareness, not only the pains that have defined us, but how do we create discipline by learning to embrace pain to avoid suffering? Because that is a huge concept that applies through all this. But really then the next step of that is that we realize the things that keep us stuck, right? I know that I've worked with some of the highest performers in the world, and what keeps people stuck, most people think is because they have the wrong strategy and tactics in their life. Well, if I just push through this and I show up and I just get more reps and not worrying about what people think, then that feeling is going to go away. But to your point, more often than not, we just start suppressing it and then it blows up and hurts us in some point. Or we react in an environment in a way that actually creates way more pain and damage than what would have happened if we actually just did the hard work on the front end to unroot it. So we help people go deep inside to really understand that these emotions that many people in this world use to create wedges and gaps to drive them to become dependent on their programs, we flip it on its head to allow everybody that enters into our world to understand their emotions so that they can be used for their benefit. That's how we elevate and empower people and move them so they're no longer confined by those things that have kept them stuck in the past. Because again, what keeps people stuck is not strategy and tactics. So it's not the next 7-step system for success. It's not go learning and learning more sales tactics. It's not about learning how to network better, communicate better. Yeah, those are all things that are important, critically important, but that's not what keeps you stuck.
Right.
I've said it now multiple times on this call. The things that keep us stuck are the emotional triggers, behavioral patterns, and environmental conditioning. And the trigger is the piece that is the most impactful because our triggers can either pull us, causing us to react, which is where we create damage, or we pull the trigger on our emotional triggers, causing us to respond, needing no need for repair.
Can you give some examples?
Beautiful. Yes.
Yeah.
My wife would ask me a simple question. When I was dealing with shame, she'd say, honey, what are we going to do with the kids this weekend? I told you early in the call, the thing I care about most is being a good husband and father.
Yeah.
And how I used to hear that from her was an implication that I wasn't doing enough to be a good husband and father. What are you going to do to make up for you being a bad husband and father this weekend with the kids? Not what my wife said, but what my shame caused me to hear. So then what would happen is I'd get defensive because I identify with being a really good husband and father. I'd elevate a little bit. I'd get a little puffed up. My armor would start to go up, and I'd react by rattling off the 10 things I'd done in the last 4 days to prove that I was a good husband and father, even though that wasn't even what she was asking. Now, all of a sudden, I've created damage, causing her armor to go up, which means that for me to neutralize and diffuse that interaction between us, I have to take ownership and actually repair, because it wasn't about her question. It was about how I heard the question because of my own shame. Mm. Now, my shame wasn't my fault, but the damage that I create as a result of it, especially once I become aware of it, becomes my responsibility. And so now in those situations, because I've gone through the inside out, because I know the work that needs to be done, if I sense, because I know how shame moves through my body, I know how I get triggered by it. I have about 5 or 6 different ways that shame moves through my body. I have over 50 or 60 triggers that I'm aware of. So now when my wife asks me that question or any other question, if I feel the wall of defense go up, the first thing I do is communicate to her, hey, sweetie, I don't really know what happened, but I feel like I just got triggered and I felt like I got a little defensive right here, which tells me that I probably didn't hear you correctly. Can you please rephrase what you just said so that I can hopefully hear it better? Or if I can't remove my armor right now because I've been triggered so defensively, can we revisit this conversation later once I've had a chance to reconcile what's going on with me? Mm. See the difference in the two paths?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I could, I'm just devil's advocate here for a second. I can push my wife just being like, are you kidding me? This again? You're just putting it off for another day, or you're making me rephrase it. I don't want to repeat myself or something like that. Because maybe there's something going on in her head or her mind. Seems like, you know.
Again, though, this was through multiple conversations on wanting to break the patterns in our communication.
Got it.
Yeah. And I can't do it alone. And so this, my example there was not to just suggest that every single person just put yourself into a position to do that. The reality of it right. is you've got to start from a position of awareness first. You have to take ownership for the fact that these things are taking place in your life, create repair that these are patterns that you're contributing to and wanting to break before you can be empowered to have that type of secondary conversation with your wife.
Right.
Because to your point, exactly. Otherwise, she's going to have no context. She'll then react and be like, well, what's happening? Right. She'll get defensive, likely, like, just to your point. Well, wait, we're pushing this off again. No, this is a priority. Why aren't we talking about this, Keaton?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more foundational work that needs to be done. Totally. But I was trying to give you an example real time.
No. That's
the difference between reaction and response. But mm-hmm. the gap to close in between there requires lots more work and communication.
Yeah. Can you imagine like a bunch of people listen to this podcast? They go and say, honey, I got emotional, you know, my defenses are going up. Let's just hold on for a second. And they get into fights more because of it.
Yeah. There's foundational conversations and work that needs to be done. But again, this concept applies in business too. Right.
Okay.
I mean, it just is what it is.
You got a business
example.
Every
single
relationship
and every single communication, like our triggers are literally the thing that keeps us from connecting with people at the deepest level in the way that we want. Our closest relationships, our associates, our clients, our community relationships, like this is the key. We typically are the ones that are creating the stimulus because we haven't done the work to understand where we're getting triggered.
Mm. Yeah. I find myself with a few things in business, like my pricing. What do I price myself at? Why do I price myself at that? You know, even if my competition is doing less and are less effective for, you know, the service that I'm doing, why am I charging less? And I mean, having conversations with clients are like always thinking that a client is going to leave.
Exactly.
When they are so happy and I had no idea that they're happy. And I want this like constant sense of validation. Oh, you're doing a great job. We love all the work you're doing. Like, and that is not the client's job. Is it nice to hear it? Sure. But like, if I'm not getting that, why do I go to, they're going to leave this month?
Yeah. And the reality is, Keaton, guaranteed that's all connected to a similar trigger that's
right.
based likely in shame and self-worth for you. Again, I'm taking a big jump at
no,
it.
No, sure. Yeah. Yeah. We just met each other 38 minutes ago. You know,
but the reality of it is the way that you're communicating about this, that's exactly the point. And I'm happy that you actually were vulnerable enough to express what you just said, because mm-hmm. that actually says that you are aware enough and you're putting in the work to be able to rectify this. And that's the first thing. And I love that. But second, what I want to say is you also have the ability to quickly understand why these triggers affect everything in our business.
Mm.
Right. I mean, literally, I have a client that I worked with. Just recently wrapped up our engagement because I'm also not the type of coach that wants people dependent on me. So typically my intensive work, I will not work with somebody in an intensive capacity for more than a year. We have other ways that people can access coaching with me directly that go well beyond that. And in some sort of a regular basis, but my intensive work, I won't do for over a year because I don't want dependency. I want elevation and empowerment. Just wrapped up this engagement with this guy, right? Runs a very successful commercial real estate company. They work in development, property management, real estate investment. Like they literally, so they have property owners, ownership. They have ones that they manage that they don't own. They've got all these collaborative deals. COVID hit. We started working together September of that year. September of that year, he communicated to his team that he had 18 months of liquidity left in the business. He was going to do everything in their power to ensure that they had a smooth exit, but it was a declining market in commercial real estate at a time when everything was being obliterated. And then at the time, he was just on the tail end of a $600,000 settlement that took place where he got really bent out of shape because of what had taken place. And the organization, his own organization, owed him over $200,000 personally because he'd foregone his own payment to be able to sustain his employees.
Yep.
This was the dynamic. Okay. What we started to understand is that he had a very, very deep level of shame. It manifested as worth and scarcity, right? And what really started to take place is that he was starting to realize that he was the greatest blocker in his business. He was the greatest blocker with his associates. He was the greatest blocker around creating and moving through all these things. He was having issues in his marriage. They'd been married for 14 years. They'd lived in the same house. They always had these aspirations to either redo the living room or move into a bigger house. Well, 14 years in the house, their kids are now grown or almost grown, and they're now in the same small space. He used to ride his bike from coast to coast three times in the United States. He was now obese, overweight, numbing himself with alcohol and other things. Mm-hmm. All these things were happening. We got to the root of it. We really understood where it came from. We spent a lot of time with it. We started to communicate through this. We started to really help him understand real time. He would catch himself when he was getting triggered in these moments, and the patterns were creating himself so that he could pause in those moments, take a breath, and recreate a new path. Mm. It was only 6 months before the business started to change trajectory. And what I will tell you is that one of the reasons that we've wrapped up working together is at the tail end of last year, right? So we'd worked together for just about a year and a half all in. He was a unique experience because of the way that he was leaning into the process. Here's what happened. They literally increased their business by 130% over the course of the last 6 months. He's extended new employee benefits lines. He's hired new people. He's fully reimbursed from the company. He netted himself over $600,000 last year, in addition to the reimbursement that he got on top of that. They moved into a new home. They have a whole new lifestyle. His wife reached out to me to thank me because she's never seen him this way, and that they're communicating and more connected in their house than they ever have been. In their business, they are literally amplifying. And oh, by the way, they've grown by 130% in the last 6 months, but they also closed the first eight-figure financial raise deals that they'd had in their business successfully. They closed two of them for a total of $60 million in less than 30 days. 18 months prior, he was telling his business and all of his associates they were going out of business.
Yeah, it's not strategy or tactics,
his scarcity,
right?
Was actually closing his own business. And when he did the work on himself, they are now exploding.
Mm. Yeah, I just want to point out because that it is not strategy or tactics. You know what I mean? He probably had a lot of ways to build the business prior to that and still had those same ways to get, you know, it was... It's more the mindset, but a lot of it, you know, that's.
And so, but you crazy. Articulating the things that you experience, right? Like that's the thing is business owners. And by the way, I'm subject to the same thing. I teach this stuff. Right. I work with people on a deep level in this stuff, and I'm still subject to it. It happens. But the faster we can identify like who we are and how we're entering into the world, the more we can free ourselves, free our businesses, free our associates, free our clients, and all the people that are around us.
Mm. So, I don't know if this comes up for your clients or not, but this comes up for me is like, because I'm becoming aware of like, you know, that I have either shame or I catch myself like, you know, thinking that a client's going to leave, but I know that it's not supposed, like I end up battling with myself. Cause one part of myself is like, nope, you're worthless. You can't charge as much. You like, how is someone paying you this much a month? And like, you're nowhere near deserving. And then the other side of it is like, no, I can't say that to myself. I know I have to have better self-talk. And I start saying, no, Keaton, you're awesome. You should be doing 10 times as much. Like, and it's this weird dichotomy. And I think it's like, may not even be healthy to be having both of those things, but it may not be healthy, but it might be normal. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think that that's something that we just have to pay attention to. What you hit on is actually something that's very, very real. And yes, I would tell you that I work with this with all of my own clients, because typically when people start with raising self-awareness, most people become more aware of all the ways they should be judging themselves instead of what to do about it.
Yeah.
So it perpetuates the cycle. And what you just articulated is that you actually have, right, a feeling, right? Mm-hmm. The feeling is telling you, like, I'm afraid my clients are going to leave. I'm a little bit insecure. I might be judged. Like, I don't know if I can charge more. But the intellectual thought that you have is saying just the opposite.
Yeah.
So what you're experiencing more than anything is a misalignment between your intellectual and your emotional narrative. So when I talk about this from a think about thinking, think about feeling, feel thinking, and feel feeling, that that's the quadrant that we live in, that's how we start to reconcile and bring our intellectual and emotional narratives into alignment so they are congruent with each other. Because then it immediately reduces the resistance and energy during your experience through it. So part of this is to say, okay, well, if the feeling is predominant first for you, which I think is the case, right? You're feeling, right, unworthy. You're feeling like a little bit scarce,
yeah,
right? Totally. And so allowing yourself to feel that for just a second to identify what is it that you're feeling, not why, not all the other things, but just feel the feeling for a second. Okay, this is real to me in this moment, right? Now you can shift to thinking about the feeling. What do I think about the feeling? Well, it doesn't really align with what I know I believe, right? I know that I am worthy. I know that I have a product that's or service that's worth what I'm charging and probably more. My clients are extremely happy. And so this doesn't really make sense. So now all of a sudden you have a thought about the feeling and you're able to see and identify the incongruency there. Now you can move over into the feeling, the thinking, okay? Which is, oh, okay, well, here's my thought process. If I actually sit in this thought process, which is that my clients are happy, actually have the worth that I can absolutely take care of and I can do these things. Well, how do I feel about that narrative? Oh shit, I feel pretty good about that narrative.
Right, yeah.
I believe that narrative. That is true for me, right? So then you have to go into the think about thinking, which is probably not where you're going to exist, but you need to sit there for a second. Okay, if I feel good about that thinking, let me critically evaluate the thinking that's coming from this. And oh, by the way, if now I can very clearly identify that my thinking is solid, my feeling, I understand where it is. Again, that's why it's important to understand the root. Because what you can then do is justify that why you're feeling makes sense. Your self-worth, your insecurity, your fear of being judged, those are all connected to something that, again, are not your fault. That's a conditioned emotional trigger that took place earlier. But now that you're aware of it, you can be intentional, right? And you can move through it because it can now be your responsibility. So now that you understand the two narratives and the distinguishing factor between them, you've looked at feeling, thinking, thinking about feeling, you know where your feeling and your thoughts exist. Now all of a sudden you can understand where the incongruency is, which is, okay, I'm attaching to a feeling, which is a historical label in something that was conditioned into me, but it's no longer my belief system. So you can now move through that as long as you've done the work to unroot it. You can move through the particular situations real time. But again, I'm going to go back to until you unroot it, the feeling is still going to exist and it's difficult to actually remove and diffuse it. So that quadrant is about aligning our intellectual and emotional narrative so that what we're seeing and feeling is incongruency. Does that make sense, brother?
No, that actually does make sense. It does. I think breaking it down apart like you just did, when you first said it, you're like, think about our thinking and feel about our feeling and think about our feeling and feel about our thinking. Like, it's like, that's what the hell did you say? But the way you just broke it down makes total sense. Total sense. And the process to do it.
And so some people have to enter on the thinking side. Some people have to enter on the feeling side based on where they arrive. That quadrant can be entered from any angle.
Cool.
And so that's one of the things that's why it's really important for us to understand, are we hardwired intellectually or emotionally? I will tell you for myself, more often than not, I enter on the thinking side because that's my predominant narrative.
Mm.
My wife is just the opposite. She feels first. So she enters on the feeling side more often than not. Now I've entered on the feeling side. She's entered on the thinking side, but it's all dependent on the situation.
Right.
But that's how we get to see ourselves more clearly so we can move faster with less effort.
Very cool. So I'm wondering, is there anything like, people listen to this, maybe they can't afford to work with you, or they don't know who to reach out to. Do you have a book by any chance?
I'm co-authored in a bunch of books, but I'm waiting. I have a book that's in development, but it I will not release until the time is right.
Okay. Well, when it's right, you let me know so I can let all my followers know. So
yeah.
And so I can get my copy, of course, signed.
dude, bro, you get a signed copy, of course.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think, like, there's so many people that need this, obviously. You clearly know. Is there anything, like, even small, like little things that people can either do to raise their awareness or start, like, processing this so that they don't have to, you know, hire a coach or something, like just something they can do day to day that they're like, oh, I can handle that, you know?
Yeah. So I'm going to say just one core thing is I think so many people lack awareness on even the things that drain them and the things that feed them. right? And so many people are like, well, I don't know who I am. Well, no wonder you don't know who you are, because you've chased all the what's of the world and you've lost who you are as a result of it, right? I did the same thing. And so one of the things to pay attention to is getting to the core of awareness around the things that feed us and the things that drain us also aligns us with who we are in the beginning stages. Just start with two lists. Mm-hmm. The first list, I want you to write down all the people, places, sources of information, environments, things that you consume or do that light you up, that you could spend 8 hours doing and it felt like one, that leave you feeling so good about yourself, so energized, so happy, so connected that you can't wait to get out of bed the next day to be with those people in that place or doing that thing. Really pay attention to it, right? Because we all know what that feels like. Yet we aren't always intentional about spending intentional time on those things that light us up and make us feel the best version of ourselves. Even though we're aware that some of those things exist in our world, so many people just don't. Create the counter list. People, places, sources of information, environments, things that you consume or do, right? That leave you feeling defeated, leave you feeling depleted, leave you feeling unworthy.
Yeah, what about the insecure things that make you feel good in the moment, hurt later? You put them in the depleting column?
Yes. Yeah. That's a great question. I've never had anybody ask me that question, but yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because there are things that we do that numb us to make us feel good in the moment, but actually have a greater impact in the way that we experience the pain or the ripple effect of it on the tail end. Mm-hmm. I would put those as draining activities, not feeding activities. Those are really numbing activities, if we want to call it what it is, but they're on the negative side of the list.
Sure, sure.
Great question. Great question. But again, create that list, right? Mm-hmm. Most people don't go to the level of awareness and intentionality to even know who and what fits on each list. And if all we were to do is to remove, reduce, or diffuse the things on this negative list and spend more time over here, it already has raised our level of awareness and already has put us closer to who we are. Mm. Now, I have clients that actually have these lists that become a working document, because the life and world that we live in changes so rapidly that new people, new situations, new things enter real time. So I have clients that literally have developed this list. And when any new person enters, any new thing enters, they are quickly evaluating what side of the list it fits on.
Mm.
So that they can live their life in alignment. That's one of the things we teach in our courses and other things as well. This is one of our core philosophies. It's not all so deep on the emotional side, but it's about helping people really understand how to build their life of intentional alignment so that it can become self-regulating over time. We know what fits and what doesn't. And the thing is so many people might experience these feelings, but because they haven't gone to the level of intent, they exist over here more often than not. And they just are convinced that they have no influence or control of their destinies, which is why so many people feel like they're victims, because they lack the awareness. Our minds process 11 million bits of information per second, but we're consciously aware of about 40. That right there suggests that we largely live in the unconscious. So until we go through a systematic process of moving the unconscious to the conscious, the unaware to the aware, we are going to feel like life is fate. We are going to feel like victims and we have no influence over control. But once we start to become aware, we can be intentional, because we cannot be intentional with what we're unaware of. And so that's the first thing I start, is just raise your level of awareness. And if you don't know where to start, ask some of the people closest to you. Ask them questions. Hey, if there was something I do in my world that you could remove from me and place into your world, what would that be? If there's something that I do to you or around you or to people that you've witnessed that might create damage or I'm blind to, what would those things look like? Mm. But if you ask the question, make sure you're willing to receive the answer.
Right? Yeah.
And so I would say that those are all those things. And again, and I would say, to your point, and this isn't even a promotional thing here, but there are a lot of people that can't afford one-to-one coaching with me. That's okay. I think that 90% of people aren't even ready for a coach to begin with. So you can do foundational work to begin with, but we have lots of solutions in our world that range in all different price ranges with different coaches, different pieces around our content. But what I will tell you is, we also know that to impact a billion lives, that 99.9999999% will never pay us a dollar. And we are very okay with that. So you've been following for a while. You see, we pump out content.
Yeah.
And we don't pump out content for vanity metrics. We pump out content because we truly want to elevate and empower people. And a lot of these things that I talk about and we go deep on in our coaching work, you can get the surface level or even some deeper if you just consume our content.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's free to everybody. Yep. And I would say that that's an easy low hanging fruit. And that's not just to try to get more followers. I'm legitimately saying that's why we do it. Not for us, for you.
Yeah. That's why I do this. I'm not trying to make any money. I'm not trying to sell anyone anything. Just want to bring some information to people that, you know, honestly, that's helped me. I'm reaching out to podcast guests that have been in podcasts that I listen to that has impacted me when I listen to
the beautiful.
Yeah. So I want to bring it to more people. It is beautiful. And your content's great. It's easy to digest. Do you have a YouTube channel too?
I do. Longer. And I will tell you, and I'm just going to own, that it is not an area that we've spent like tons and tons of time curating our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But Bogert's Bullets, which is one of the things that we first started getting known for, is where that lives. We have some other content up there. But mm-hmm. our team is actually putting a focus on YouTube, because everything you see on social is also going to live on YouTube very soon.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. Well, definitely go follow this guy, man. I mean, can they reach out to you? They go to your website. Like, what's the best way?
Yeah. If you go to at Bogert Brian on any social media channel, you can always DM us, DM me. I monitor those things. We engage with people directly. You can check us out at brianbogert.com as well. And then, I guess I'm going to ask your permission, because I never come onto these things to promote, right? Free resource that I'd love to give to your audience if that's okay with you.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. What is it?
Okay. So you asked about low hanging fruit, right? What are things that people could do? We literally developed a free course that is all the way through the introductory and the first chapter of our normal course that exists. And we've made over 30 minutes of video content, the initial beginning with the end in mind, understanding purpose, legacy, and the beginning stages of identifying with who you are, all for free. All of it's free. Okay. Boom. If you go to nolimitsprelude.com, you can get access to it there. Here's my disclaimer. Yes, you exchange your email and sign up for the course. So we get that. That's not why we're doing it. Yes, you will get emails throughout you completing it, because we want to make sure that you actually absorb it and consume it, and that we're here to support you. And yes, you will get 4 emails after you're done completing it, looking for additional ways to engage, whether it's the course or other places where we can support you. Again, this is not to sell you, funnel you, or keep you perpetually getting just spam emails from us. It's to engage you in the process and the time that you're investing in yourself, and to make sure that we're here and able to do so. But I always disclose that, because I don't want any, it's fully transparent. Yes, we get it. Yes, you will get communications from us, but no, we will not be spamming you beyond your completion of the course.
Yeah, that's nice, man. And not to mention, a free course is a free course. Pay with my email any day. That's awesome. I just, before we wrap it up all the way, I do have I have 2 questions I ask all my guests. I didn't really have an opportunity to work it into the conversation, but I'm just interested. Can you tell me what's the biggest regret you have in your life?
This one's going to be heavy for me for a second. I would tell you that I try not to live in regret, but I will tell you that the thing that is still something that I realize the impact that I've had that I wish I could change, is that I dealt with anger for a very long time and I didn't even know it. It was only March of last year that my wife and I started to unpack it, because my anger was buried so deep it could barely be excavated. And I created a lot of damage, primarily to my wife and kids. I didn't scream them. I wasn't like screaming a rage yet. I wasn't hitting them. I wasn't any of these things, but my anger impacted our household. It impacted them as individuals, and it impacted my ability to connect with them, because I had an edge about me, even if I wasn't outwardly angry.
Yeah.
And so I guess my regret would be that I didn't have the opportunity to see that in myself sooner, or that I didn't hear all of the times my wife attempted over the course of 14 years to tell me that this was her experience. I didn't hear it, despite her attempt to tell me multiple times. Now, why I don't live in regret is because we were given a beautiful gift last year and we are actively working on it. I made a promise to my wife once we started to understand it, that I was going to do everything in my power to ensure that we never felt the negative effects of anger in our household again. And I'm proud to say that in over a year, it's only happened twice. But I had to take 10 days to lead myself through my own. I handed my wife my phones. I said, get with the teams. I don't want to communicate with them. I'm blocking out the world. I went inward for 10 days to run through my own inside out methodology, because it was the first time I'd become aware of anger. And I wanted to ensure that I could do everything in my power to fulfill that promise I made to my wife. But that's something I'll never get back. I won't ever have that time back. I won't ever have those interactions back. And the patterns that I developed in my wife and kids, I'm quickly trying to unwind. But I carry weight around that still.
I can relate to that. I think many fathers can, probably mothers too, but yeah. Not to diminish that it was wrong or right, but like, being a parent's hard as hell.
It is,
you know, not like I said, not to diminish that no one should be, you know, or releasing their anger on their kids or the wife without a doubt. But I mean, yeah, it's,
but it happens. It's a very normal thing and we don't talk about it enough. Right. And it's,
yeah. Right. And so yeah. It's so taboo. It's like, no,
and I mean, here's the thing. You're right. Being a parent is the most difficult thing I've ever done. It's also the most meaningful, you know, and I don't mean to layer on top of this, but we have two special needs kids too. There's a different level of like challenge that we face. And so many special needs parents do, right? Every kid's different. Mm. So I'm not trying to say it's worse or better. It's just different, right?
Sure.
And so it's real. So I appreciate you saying that, because that's truly why I share my truth. Mm-hmm. I just want to give others permission to live theirs, right? It's okay. You can break those patterns.
I appreciate you sharing it on the podcast, like just in general out in the open. Like it takes courage to say like, yeah. I will raise my voice and I feel terrible about it. You know, like I don't run around telling people on podcasts that I'm like, feel like I'm a shitty dad, you know, 3 days of the week or whatever, you know, not all the time, but
it's,
you know, it's, what I'm saying? It's there's shame real, attached right? to that too. Right.
Attached it to anger. A deep level of shame attached to it. Yeah, mm-hmm,
totally. I just want to get these other two questions in. What's just one book you believe everyone should read quick?
Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Oh, I haven't read that one. I'll link it up somewhere. I'll get my team to do it. So I'll make sure I get on my list too. And if you could go back in time, you can go back in time at to any age that you want to go back to, but you're only allowed to tell yourself three sentences. You can't speak to anyone else or anything like that. You're just going to go tell whatever younger age of yourself three sentences. What age would you go back to and what those three sentences be?
That's a really good question. I would probably go back. I can't identify the exact age just because of the blur of it, but it would be somewhere between the age of 8 and 10. Wow. I would probably say, you need to feel in order to heal. Never allow the world to dim your light. And recognize that who you are is perfect.
Mm. Yeah. It's great, man. I mean, I'm just going to tie it up right here. I think it's a beautiful ending. And I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know how busy you are. You're crushing it. You're running businesses. You're creating content and putting it out for everyone. And just thank you for being you and being authentic. You're not coming on here BSing anyone. You're not like trying to sell them anything. You're just out there trying to help. And I love that. That's why I'm doing this. With that being said, I'll get in a different tone. Guys, I don't ask for any money. Like, just share this out because there's someone who needs to hear this, right? I mean, this may not be the episode for you. I say this every time. It might be for your auntie, your uncle, your Sally down the street. But share this one out. Leave us a review because I want to get more people like Brian on here. I want to, you know, get Brian back on the podcast and say, look at how many people are listening to your episode and how big of an impact you made. Because that's what your goal is too, right? You want to impact a billion lives by a certain year or something. Yeah. So let's help Brian do that. Share this out and go follow him. I'll link up everything that we talked about in here in the show notes and everything. But until next time, guys, peace.